Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
It's the Nerdist Podcast number 359. We are doing a show at San Diego Comic-Con. I think we're going to be doing a lot of stuff at San Diego Comic-Con. Of course, we have Course of the Force leading up to it, starwars.com/Course of the Force. And we're doing a live Nerdist Podcast at the Balboa Theater on the Saturday night of Comic-Con. So come to that. Nerdist.com/calendar for information on that show and many, many, many others. I'd like to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Squarespace makes building a website super, super easy. It's an all-in-one platform, and you can make it a blog, it can be a portfolio, website, and now an online store, because Squarespace introduces new commerce solutions that allow you to instantly create a store and start selling products right away. There's very powerful, very flexible e-commerce solutions, and it's integrated to work with every Squarespace template, allowing for sales, both physical goods, digital goods. For example, you can sell music CDs. Because kids love the CDs. They love the compact discs. Sell 8-tracks. Throw them for a loop. Hipsters will love it. You can sell MP3s if you want to. Now, it's a fast account merchant account setup, so you can accept payments right away, credit or debit cards. And they make it really easy. They absolutely make it so that you can be a business tycoon online. They give your website the best mobile experience for your users, and they have great customer support. So if you want to build a website, blog, portfolio, whatever, go to Squarespace, get a free trial, squarespace.com/Nerdist, sign up for a free account. No credit card needed. Try it out. Start building your website. And then if you decide to purchase, use the offer code NERDIST5 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, which includes monthly and annual plans. Also, they register domains, so check that out as well. squarespace.com/Nerdist. Use the offer code NERDIST5. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. Radio voice. I am very excited about this podcast, as I am about everything, if you listen to this with any regularity. It's all genuine, but I am a huge fan of Band of Horses, to the extent that I had this weird idea when I was traveling around the country. I was like, you know what? I'm going to find a city that they're performing in, and I'm gonna see if I'm performing near it, and then I'm going to pin them down like butterflies in a box. Or like horseflies in a box, a band of horseflies. And let the meme begin. So I actually found out that when I went down to perform at the Moon Tower Festival in Austin, they were also performing, I believe it's Stubbs. And so reached out to them, and they said yes. And so I sat down with Ben Bridwell and Ryan Monroe, and we just chatted for like an hour. And just fucking so much fun to... I fanned out on them a little bit, but really, they were dudes I would hang out with. So at the end, if you stick around the end of the podcast, I tacked on a live performance of a song called Knock Knock, which is on their most recent album called Mirage Rock, released in September of last year. But the track I'm putting on is from a live mini album from iTunes Festival London 2012. So here you go, Nerdist Podcast episode number... What number is this one? I'm going to say it's 359. I don't even know why I'm numbering them anymore. Does it really matter? It's another Nerdist Podcast with Band of Horses. Because I'm Chris Hardwick. No one's going to love you. No one is ever going to love you more than I do.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Which, is Ryan going to join us?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I don't know. He's probably taking a huge crap. I'd imagine.
I would imagine. You know, when I think about what Ryan does, I think he's probably just taking a huge crap. When I average out in a day,
I can't find him. It's usually what's happening.
He's usually taking a huge crap. All right, this is good. This will work. You sound good. The sound quality's good. We're in a super snazzy suite at the top of. I mean, this is really in a. This is an apartment. This is.
Yeah. It's a. Yeah, I don't know what you'd call this thing. Is a massive loft? What the hell?
I don't know, but I have to say, you've treated it very respectfully. This is not the kind. This is not what I would expect to see at the top floor of a snazzy hotel with a band doing a show tonight. Everything seems to be in place. There's really just a bottle of water out. It's not.
I've hidden all the evidence. Yeah, scrubbed all the bloody footprints up. Yeah.
Bloody footprints.
Yeah.
Isn't it weird? So there was blood pooled on the ground, and someone just walked through it.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. We'll probably keep it on the wraps until we get sequestered or whatever.
So yeah. You guys are playing Stubbs tonight.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Stubbs is such a great venue. Austin is. It's one of these places that no city has more festivals than Austin.
Yeah.
And so I've performed at a ton, music, comedy, and whatever. Do you guys get through here a lot?
It seems like it.
Yeah. We were here a month ago for
South by Southwest.
For South by Southwest.
Oh, you're here for South by
Southwest. Or the abbreviated is By Southwest.
By Southwest.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
that's what we say in the industry.
Yeah. By Southwest?
Yeah, just to keep it short.
We actually played like the technology part of it, which is like before
interactive.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was some nerdy stuff.
Which has gotten just as I guess I shouldn't say just as big as music, but it's gotten pretty big.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many toys everywhere and crazy free shit.
I think you want to play interactive over the music portion because you're not competing with 1,500 other bands. You're basically competing with what's Twitter gonna say?
What
are the tech companies gonna announce?
Yeah, and we opened for The Roots, so that was like a fucking no-brainer for us. So.
Did you guys play with them at all?
No, I mean, we played early, and then I think they even had some trouble. Somebody I think Questlove had another gig or something like that and couldn't get here in time or missed a flight.
Mm-hmm.
So they were kind of short-staffed.
Yeah,
but
he could play drums, and then before you know it, there's just another dude on stage.
Killing it. Yeah,
Oh, okay.
Any city in the country, if you shouted out on any street, who's going to play drums? Someone's going to jump up if you're in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
No
Other
doubt.
Cities might be like, well, I could call someone, but here, they just fucking step out of the way, and then they right there.
Totally. They're next door, fucking already playing.
Yeah. So. I was like, we were talking about getting backup singers to possibly do some stuff, you know, in Nashville or something, and we're just like, yeah, we'll just go to any restaurant and just like...
Grab a waitress.
Grab some waitresses.
You didn't even have to ask. You just be like, can you be here at the studio? Yeah, absolutely.
You don't even have to ask if you can sing.
And they're there.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's pretty.
I tracked you guys down. I've been a fan of Band of Horses for a long time, and I was like, you know, I just one of these days, like one of your songs came up on my iPhone, and I was like, one of your songs came up on the phone, and I was like, I got to get these guys on. I don't know how to track them down, and I start looking at cities you're in to see if I'm anywhere near you, and God damn it, Austin. The same day that I came out for a comedy festival.
Nice.
So thank you for unintentionally being in a place. I was like, you know, even if they're like it's somewhere in the middle of the country, I'll fly somewhere and drive. Yeah. And so I was able to pin you down in Austin. So thank you.
It's kind of how our parents plan their vacations too.
That's right.
So. Where are you kids playing?
I'd love to go to Topeka. I've never been there.
Your parents come to the shows? Your parents come to the shows?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, it's great. It's always nice to have a dose of fam around, you know. We're actually playing in the South this run, so they don't have to travel too far. So.
Are you from South Carolina?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ryan and I grew up together, played baseball together, and went to elementary school together. And he later joined the band once we had moved back from... I lived up in Seattle for a while, started the band, moved back home, and Ryan joined the band right around then, 2007.
Yeah. What's the music scene in South Carolina like?
You ever heard Margaritaville? Yeah. It's like that. Brown Eyed Girl? That's a popular one.
You know, Brown Eyed Girl was one of those songs that I used to fucking hate. And I'm a big Van Morrison fan.
Yeah.
But it was one of those songs that I didn't like the people who liked it when I was in college. Like,
you'd be at a party and then Brennan go come on and every like irritating fraternity and sorority person would be like, this is my song! You're like, you don't even have brown eyes. It's not your song.
You have one brown eye.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not everyone's song. Maybe, no. Maybe that's why everyone loves that song.
Shit, it was all the big like the fraternity and sorority songs were like Brown Eyed Girl and like Back in Black, whatever Back in Black are like, fuck yeah!
Yeah. You know, it's funny, like once you get past the point of saturation, like you start. I mean, the older I get, the more I can appreciate the like super overplayed songs.
Yeah,
because it gets to a point where like you hear them so many times, it's like they start even sounding like
as a
different.
As a band, do you want that, or is it like, well, maybe that's one step too far?
Shit! I mean, if we could have a song like "Back in Black" or something that is overplayed like that,
hell yeah,
you know, fuck yeah,
take anything, man. Yeah. Shit, yeah.
There's not, because I always, it seems like, oh, it'd be great to, you know, like have a hit song or a bunch of hit songs, but then there's a point where it's too much of a hit song, and then there's backlash because people are like, it's either your other songs are either not exactly like that one, or people are just, they feel like it's over, you're overexposed because it's too much.
Well, see, you know, it's rare. Like, you think of bands of our ilk or whatever that have that kind of success with a song like Modest Mouse with Float On or something like that.
Yeah.
You still see Modest Mouse playing that damn song every festival gig or whatever, and people go fucking apeshit.
Yeah.
So it's a blessing if you ever get anything close to that.
Good. So you're on the positive side of the fence and not the, we're not going to play the hits because we're, you know.
We're just not going to write the hits.
Yeah, yeah.
We would love to, but man, not possible.
That's good.
You know, there's a handful of bands where when I first stumble upon them and I go, I think, oh, I'm probably just going to like this one song. And then, oh, shit, I like this other song. Oh, fuck, I like this other song. You know, it's bands like, and I hope you take this as a compliment, like, I fucking love Rogue Wave is another band that I absolutely love.
Oh, man.
And then you guys are in that group where I'm like, fuck, you know, Infinite Arms and Cease to Begin. It's just like song after song. It's like, oh, and this one's really cool.
Awesome.
So just let me fan all over you for a minute and then we'll get to the regular conversation. But... You guys, not just, it's like these gorgeous harmonies, but then you take left and right turns where musically I don't expect, oh, he went that way, and I think you're going to go the other way. So it's, I'm always pleasantly surprised by what you guys do with your songs.
Awesome.
So where were you, what inspired you, like what was your, when you started, who did you say like, oh, we want to be like this band, and then you sort of grow off and form your own voice, but what were your bands?
Very easily, Neil Young, growing up with Neil Young stuff was huge, and just like the seeped into the bones and blood of, when I started singing, I guess, in my late 20s, I think initially just went that way, or Flaming Lips and Built to Spill, just the higher register of singing at least, and then My Morning Jacket, absolutely. Those were, I think, the went into the main, the soup pot or whatever.
And was there a certain point where you started to, because it felt like, it's funny, I didn't realize you started singing later, like late in your 20s.
Yeah.
Because your albums all have a pretty strong point of view from the get-go, where it's like the second you hear a Band of Horses song, you're like, oh, I know that band, I know that point of view.
Yeah, it beats me, I don't know, maybe it just came later in life, and maybe I had a good grasp of what I wanted our band to sound like, being a music fan first and foremost,
or what you didn't want it to sound like.
Yeah I don't know, I remember listening to the radio, like I was nannying or, you know, washing dishes, and always listening to the radio and being like, oh, I don't care for this, or I figured I can't have an opinion about music and be like a critic unless I try it myself, and so I did.
How long did it take you to, was one of those things where you for a long time said, I want to be in a band, but maybe not yet, and then like, what, was there a moment where you were like, fuck it, I gotta do this now?
Kinda, yeah. I was actually releasing records, I had a little tiny label, and I was releasing my friend's records, and their drummer left, and they needed someone to go on tour with them and play drums. I'd never played music really ever before. And it was really minimalistic drumming, and somehow I still managed to be the worst drummer alive. But I ended up going on tour with them and recording with them for a number of years, and got used to just that lifestyle. I loved it so much. Then the band broke up, and I said, shit, I really like that. So I'll just, we have all these instruments not being used at the practice space, I'll just try to write some songs. And I did, and got signed to Sub Pop.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's really, really bizarre. Makes no sense.
Are you guys good at staying in one place? Can you go home and relax ever? Or are you... Do you get antsy if you're home for more than... Do you have homes? Or are you just on the road most of the time?
I forgot. I live in Boston with my fiance. Oh, okay. I just moved up there from South Carolina, so that's a large change. But yeah, it's definitely... I think once you pass the 5 weeks off the road, I think after the first month, it's pretty... I'm personally ready to get back to it, you know?
Yeah.
We just had recently had 2 months off, and I was just like, I gotta find a fucking hobby or something.
Yeah.
You can only write so many shitty songs and annoy your girlfriend so much, you know?
I thought about getting a landscaping job or something just to have some perspective to write different songs, you know?
Yeah.
Band of Horses' new album is weirdly about landscaping and topiaries.
Yeah.
But I always...
Opening chord, dude.
But honestly, I always thought... I don't know why I thought this would be a cheat, but I always thought, a cool way to write a song would just be to... in that case, you could just look at a weird topiary and then just describe it in abstract terms. And then that would be a song because people would assign meaning. It's about something, but if you're not being direct about it, then people can assign their own meaning.
Oh, wow.
Their own meaning to it.
Shit, I'm about to cancel the show and just write some songs today.
About topiaries?
Yeah, hell yeah.
I'm going to go to some gardens and look at some elephants and plants.
Actually, we'll cut you in some of the publishing.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Just point to whatever and you're 15%.
Right that there. Thing.
Yeah.
What is that thing over there?
Go.
I always thought what I would do is I would be really cool to just take old movie footage and put it on mute and then just sort of write about whatever's happening.
Oh man. That's one of my favorite things to do is have it on mute and, you know, I'm sure you do it too. Like you did when you were younger. I still do it. Just but mess around with who's...
Oh, yeah, of course.
The dialogue.
Yeah.
Especially 3 or 4 in the morning, it's really fun.
Oh, Cary Grant says, we're going to fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
But do you do the Cary Grant voice?
No,
you go, we're going to fuck, darling. Or do you say, I'm going to fuck you, I'm Cary Grant.
I'm like, I'm Cary Grant, and I'm going to fuck you.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're going to carry these balls, I'm going to grant you an orgasm.
Oh, God.
Whoa.
Damn.
You know that they were all, when the cameras went off, they were all just filthy people.
Yeah. Just fingering themselves.
Cary, please. We have to shoot now. One more second.
Yeah.
I just have to finish this.
One more second. I'm
auto-fingering.
Fingering myself.
No one was washing their hands.
Yeah.
That was the Band of Horses podcast. They were weirdly talked a lot about Cary Grant fingering himself.
Every day we talk about Cary Grant fingering himself.
I think if you really strip away a lot of what your songs are about, I think underneath there's an element of Cary Grant fingering himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, or at least somebody.
Yeah.
Someone's always going to be buttholing themselves.
Cary Grant.
Yeah.
It's, he's just, it's, when you really listen to the music, you just picture Cary Grant just fingering himself going, no one is ever going to love you more than I do.
Yeah.
He's talking to himself.
To his finger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just for the podcast listener at home, they didn't really need to know that I was actually doing the space work. As we're talking about it.
I guess that's why they said audio only for the interview, because I didn't realize you'd be completely naked like this.
You have to understand, we need to earn the explicit tag any way that we can. On iTunes, it says explicit.
That makes it cool.
And so if there isn't at least 5% butt fingering, then there's no, we can't earn the tag, and then it's false.
Yeah.
But if they can't see you, why did you have to get naked for this? I don't understand.
Because I'm really committed to making it authentic.
Yeah, I mean, when he came to the door, our tour manager called and it's like, Chris is fucking naked. We're like, it doesn't matter. Bring him up here.
Cool.
Clothes are an invention.
Especially. By the naked men coming
through. Yeah, no, it's just the machine trying to get you down.
I know.
All
but
the time.
It was refreshing.
When are you going to free yourselves?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's pretty inspiring. It's
still early. Let's see what happens.
In all seriousness, I worked at K-Rock in Los Angeles in the 90s, and I went to one of the... the acoustic Christmas shows that they do. Have you guys played acoustic Christmas?
Uh-uh.
It's a big show, big mashup of bands that they have. And No Doubt was playing, so this should give you some idea of when this was. And the drummer, he was back there drumming, and then he ran out from behind the drums at the Gibson Amphitheater, and he was fucking totally naked. And the crowd was like, and then they went fucking bananas for it. And then he started jumping up and down and doing all this weird, making his dick dance. And I thought for sure this was real. This was before YouTube. This was before people had cameras on their phones, and so I think maybe felt a little safer.
Yeah.
But it was still like 6,000 people.
Yeah. Fuck.
And I wondered, is it weirdly freeing to do that because there are so many people that it's almost like there's no one?
Yeah.
Or is it a bold move?
That's a lot of people to see you naked at one time. I don't think 6,000 people will ever see me naked until I die.
Do you have that anxiety dream?
No, it's not anxiety at all. It's more like a, I don't know, it's more like just a flat out, just straight nasty nightmare.
A strap horrifying nightmare. Yeah.
Bucket list stuff.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Do you have an anxiety dream? Like, do you have a recurring anxiety dream? Like the I'm late for exams kind of a dream?
No, it gets a little weird when you wake up and you just dream like what happened yesterday, which was boring or whatever. Then I wake up and wonder why the fuck that happened.
You guys are too normal. Like, you're too normal for you're a rock band. You have to have fucked up demons. You have to come back and just like fucking etch skulls into you. You have to burn things into your skin to make the demons be quiet for a second because you have to feel something.
Right. Yeah, no, not so much.
Too old.
Yeah.
It's over. It's over for the tortured stuff. Tortured stuff is cute when you're young, and then you get older, you're just like, that guy is just fucking angry.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, no, I think we're pretty damn normal.
Yeah, we're pretty normal.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Real normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you write from, is there anything that's sort of pushes you to write other than just, oh, I thought of a song, or do you tend to write better when you're happier or frustrated or angry, or is there a mood?
I don't know. Always doing it. So it's hard to say, like, if the better songs come from a certain mindset that's more, you know, tortured or fucking pissed off, or sometimes even happy. It's hard to say. Shit, I don't know. Based on the last record, whatever the fuck is the opposite of that is what we'll probably go for on this one.
Why do you say that?
No. I don't know. We just need some, I don't know. The new stuff, I think, is going back to some more, like, depressing and terrifying elements. So, I don't know. The last one was so happy and just kind of, like, celebrating the fact that we can all play together without having a computer in the room.
That is actually kind of a big deal now. That's almost like, it's almost like adorable in a way where you're like, they're doing it the old-fashioned way. You're like, no, this is how people did music for a really long time.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like a fun little novelty project. But
we kind of remind ourselves that we can do that way if we want.
And do it quick. You know, we can do it quickly, but I think we're going to go back to overthinking and over-editing soon enough.
Surgical music.
That's the first single.
Yeah.
Surgical music. That's a different direction you guys are going in.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
Sort of hard rock, and it's about the academic side of music and going in
exactly.
And changing a molecule with a program to make it. You want it to not sound perfect, though. You want it to feel a little jagged so that it feels like it happened.
You do. But, I mean, I think We play live so much. It's like there's so many opportunities for it to sound jagged and shitty. You know, I think we like take the recording process. It's pretty different beast than the live shit.
Yeah. You
know? And I think we can try all we want. Even the Infinite Arms, we sat there for better part of 2 years.
Yeah.
Just tweaking it. You know, just doing everything we possibly could, and it's still still not going to be perfect. It's just, you know, we'll try, but it's not going to be, you know.
I think right. The benefit now to being a good live band is that it just gives people a reason to see you and have an experience, as opposed to just, you know, like, oh, it's disposable. I'll just listen to it, but I don't really care about the band. Like, if you can be a good live band, it just changes that. I don't know how people go and see someone who like just works off an iPod, you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand why people pay to see that, but to see like four or five people get together and actually play,
that's I don't know, just talking about making records and playing live. Some of the ideas that you have, seems like some of the ideas in your mind are perfect, and some of them are jagged and shitty, you know? So if you can make them perfectly jagged and shitty, you know, that's kind of, you know.
Yeah, that's the goal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so.
How long does it take you guys? Do you form a lot of the music as you're recording, or is everything? Do you get it all ready and tight, and then go, okay, now let's lay it down?
Hmm. Well, since none of us live in the same town, really. So whether it's like rehearsing for a show, that doesn't happen. We basically rehearse, say, like a festival gig in front of thousands of people when we've been on a break. Luckily, we know each other well enough that we can get away with that. But same thing with the studio. We'll have done a lot of demoing and stuff and then have an idea of what it's supposed to sound like and then let it take a new life form once we all get together.
Yeah.
If there was another era that you could have been a rock band in, what would you... Do you ever think about, like, oh, it would have been so fucking awesome in the 70s?
The fucking 1890s.
Yeah.
Dude, I love the 90s.
God, you know? The
1890s.
Yeah. That would have been killer.
We would be quite a sensation in 1890s.
Well, there was this whole... And I'm positive I talked about this in the podcast before, but there was this whole cluster of, for lack of a better word, I called it pioneer rock, but it was basically... It was like Midlake's Van Occupanther album and Decemberists and, you know, it was just all this, like, music from another era. Like, they're describing, like frontier themes, like frontier rock.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which, and I didn't know how to, it's like, well, it's not folk, really. It's just that the themes are of this weird era.
Right.
What are these words that they're saying?
I don't know.
Yeah.
but I think, you know, I don't know how to define what this particular era, like, you look back at 80s music and I feel like back then you're like, oh, I understand that this is all a thing. But when I think about how do you define music now? What is it? What is music of 2012, 2013?
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait until 2023 for someone else to name it or whatever.
I don't know. I still don't even know what the identity is. I mean, like, 90s rock, okay. Like, there's some, you know, Motown Philly and grunge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And some... But I feel like I recognize 90s music, but I don't know what this era of music is. And I don't know if it's just because we're in it.
Yeah. Well, were the 80s... Were they considered glam back then? Did they say, like, we're a glam band? Or is glam kind of like a derogatory term?
I think... I don't know. I feel like they must have used glam rock at the
back
time.
Back in the day? Like, Poison was... Were they just like a rock?
They were just... Hair? I think they was thought hair, of them...
Were they a hair band?
Or was that like... That was probably derogatory to them because all those guys, I think, thought of themselves as metal bands.
Metal, right.
But then it... Like, glam is the perfect way to describe what it was because it did just like... It got lipstick and hairspray and...
Yeah.
And more about the, you know, the glitziness.
Yeah.
But it's the glam period before it with like... You know, that was more punk or whatever.
Yeah.
Actually holds up quite well. Then you have the glam metal, which is just basically radio pandering
metal
to the, you know, big time music industry.
It's like David Bowie and Kiss, like in a blender, you know, or something. Like, like, holy shit.
Some record producer told me once that the reason the 80s music sounded the way that it did is because everyone was doing so much cocaine that it affected the way that they affected the way that they heard music. And so they always felt like there wasn't enough high end.
Yeah, I heard
and
that.
So
too.
So all the bass got drowned out because they just went so high end. And when you listen to all the 80s music, you're like, there's almost no bass in it. It's just all high end and tinny. Yeah. And that
and
was all
chorus on the snare.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Jeez, can't
cocaine.
Hear it. Damn it.
God damn it.
Turn it up. That's just the treble. Fuck it.
They're just freaking out back there.
So now with all the bass now and the fucking dubstep or whatever, what's the drug that's making that happen?
I don't know. It's probably got to be... It's probably ecstasy because I think ecstasy is probably... The drug that just makes people want to hug sound.
Right.
And so, like...
They feel it.
They feel it. So they want to feel the bass kind of, like, vibrate their molecules as opposed to have the shrill, high-end...
Ecstasy's still kicking, huh?
I've never done it.
Really?
I'm afraid of drugs that... If anything happens to my body that I can't immediately identify... instant panic attack.
I thought you were going to say, I'm afraid of a drug called... ecstasy. don't be afraid of that. Sounds pretty good.
It's so scary. What are you trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, if, you know, they should try to change the names to, like, death. Yeah.
Well, they... Like, no, because then...
Shit.
No, because then younger kids would want to do it.
Right.
I want to do death shit.
But I heard that people are huffing shit these days.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Why would you huff shit?
I don't know.
To get high.
That's what Google's for. Yeah, yeah.
I don't. How do you get high off shit?
You let it ferment in a bag.
You know a lot about this. Yeah. What happened?
Well, I had to get high, so I did. And that's it. End of story.
You found a way.
Yeah.
Are you a shit huffer?
Well, yeah, a little bit, a little bit.
Johnny Hufflepuffs. Shit-huffer.
They call them Hufflepuffs.
I just like to feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, puzzle.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's natural, man. My body makes it.
Yeah. You know, just huff that shit.
You know, like vodka's just potatoes. So what's wrong?
Yeah, people eat potatoes.
And I can't make potatoes with my body.
No.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. See, the best is you eat a shitload of potatoes, then shit, and then sniff it.
So you can make vodka.
Vodka.
And you can shit huff.
Mm. Yeah.
Finally.
This is good.
John Shithuff.
Attorney of law.
Yeah. Shithuff.
Have you been injured in an accident?
Yeah. Call Johnny Shithuff.
Have you been injured while huffing shit?
Coming up.
You may be entitled to workman's comp if your shithuffing was on the job.
Speaking of that,
you ready to
ice
shit?
Coffee fucking does the thing.
Do you feel, are you buzzing now?
Oh man, yeah.
You're flying.
Yeah. No, I'm just feeling like I can just take a huge crap right now.
Oh, that would have done it?
We could try it.
That's
man.
So funny. Before you came out here, Ben said that maybe he was like, oh, he's probably taking a crap.
I'm known to take a number of shits every now and then.
Do you guys do the tour bus? Are you ever in that situation where when you're in a tour, or you're not? He does a tour bus.
No, hell no.
I was going to say, in a tour bus, would you make someone pull over like a Cracker Barrel, or would you just use the toilet on the bus?
That's a
big no-no.
No one ever shits on a tour bus, and I wish to God that we could.
Well, now that people are huffing it, you'd actually be doing them a favor. It's like, I'll be right back, and then in a couple hours, we can all gather around and fly high.
Jeez.
We can touch the sky.
We could sit, and we'd be writing some... Write some hits then.
Seriously, it's the new acid.
Yeah.
New psychedelic generation.
Great as shit.
Yeah.
Is it? What do you think about that sort of old 60s or 70s idea? Well, maybe it's not even 60s or 70s, but, you know, like, oh yeah, Beatles wrote a lot of their best songs because they were super fucked up on, you know, you should thank heroin for a lot of the great music that came out. And do you buy into that? Or do you think like, that was probably just an excuse that they could do a lot of drugs?
Well, I would imagine at least with LSD and stuff, it was a huge awakening time. I mean, socially and just to have that option where no one knows how scary or how it's going to affect you later, LSD or even pharmaceutical cocaine or whatever, that's not addictive. You're fine.
My doctor gave me this.
Yeah. Exactly. So there's probably like some innocence surrounding it where people were just discovering new shit. Who knows, man? I think those people that wrote all that great music were already talented enough to have written that. So I'm sure it didn't hurt, but until later. I don't know.
Until later, when you have to cash in.
Yeah, or actually, you know, go to the DMV or something, and you're fucking super whacked out of your mind on too much acid.
Yeah, I think that's another way to kind of like, a lot of people that listen to the music haven't done all the drugs they imagine these people doing. So it kind of adds to the mystique, and it kind of helps them be like, some way understand how fucking awesome a song is. Like, oh, he must have been not heroin.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, there's no other excuse.
You couldn't have just been a talented individual.
No, right. Probably was chemical. That song is so good, he must have been fucked up. You know, that's creative stuff, you know, but I don't think that's the case.
No, I mean, Eric Clapton or something, like, completely shut in his house or whatever for years until they finally pulled him back out and said, please, God, make music. You know, I mean, it doesn't seem like the most productive time for a lot of people.
Yeah, that Aerosmith record, like before they took the big break, I can't remember what record it is, but the front of it is like caricatures of them or something. Damn, I can't remember the name. But it's when they were like holed up in with guns and a bunch of blow.
Oh, and that's when they were doing, that's when it was about, it was almost over for them until Run DMC brought them back.
Yeah, yeah. And that record is just hilarious, man. Like, it's just, I don't know, it didn't seem like...
The 70s seems like such a dangerous time to have been any kind of artist or money-making entity because people just didn't seem as aware of, like, you shouldn't do a lot of these things because they will ultimately kill you. And so these lifestyles were totally negatively reinforced by, you know, the record industry or whatever. And just people, just, it seems like they just got ruined. Like, not just like, well, I had a hit song and then I just had to get a regular job. Like, fucking ruined.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, their health, their lives. Yeah. like mega destitute, you know.
Yeah.
Super, if they lived.
It just seems like that's so true.
Such a fucked up era.
I know.
But now it feels like, hey, you could be a nice guy and you could play. Yeah, we like playing music. We're in a band. Yeah, yeah. We don't have to. It doesn't have to be fucking crazy.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah, if you don't like it, just there's so you have access to so much music. You know, you don't have to like us. You know,
no.
And support groups. There's a lot of support groups. Now, there probably weren't as many support groups in the 70s.
I wonder, yeah. I mean, there might be probably opening bands in the
70s. Hey!
Well done.
You took it.
Damn,
I said
good.
Support groups and you meant support groups. But they actually, they're called support group.
Right.
And they play open for you and then they just make sure that you have counseling afterwards.
Exactly.
That's our cover. Yeah.
The sponsors. They're opening for us.
That's a good name.
Yeah. Our first song, My Name is Bill W., is all about getting fucked up on life.
Hi, my name's Ryan, and I'm a musician.
Hi, Ryan. Yeah.
Hello. Let's fucking jam!
Yeah! Christ. Is there, when you kind of look at the albums, is there one song or two songs in particular that you, in your head, thought, oh, this is going to be the one that pops? And then it wasn't the song that pops, and maybe you were surprised by another album, one of the songs
of our own stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Shit. Yeah, I've always missed that one. Shanked that fucking fastball. shit, the first record, I thought like one of our least popular songs was going to be the first single. Fucking whiffed on that one.
Which one?
It's like the 10th song on the album, or something like that. Wicked Gill.
Gill, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Missed that one. I've missed every single damn one of them. Me and my dad, too, will always be like, we'll put money on that shit and lose every time. So, I have no idea.
But the last one, we had a pretty good idea. That one seemed like it kind of made sense for it to be released.
The only redeeming one.
Yeah. The only rocking ones on that, I guess.
Do you guys control everything about, like, is it all within your...
Hell no. We take advice, honestly. We trust our counsel in a way that, it might be even the opposite of what we want to do as far as, you know, releasing the first single or stuff like that. But we trust the people that also have more experience than us, that our management and stuff like that. We're not above taking people's advice, you know?
Yeah. And at what point... Do you ever push back and go, no, I really think it should be this? Or do you...
It's about to happen, man.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking mutiny.
The Velvet Hammer Bridwell.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. All right.
It's about to get interesting.
Yeah.
In as specific terms as you're comfortable talking about, do you want to talk about it or do you not want to talk about it?
I don't care.
Yeah, okay. What's happening?
Well, I'm just going to huff a bunch of shit.
They're advising me not to do this, but I just don't think they understand.
No, I think it's... it's tough to say. I mean, I think we've allowed ourselves to kind of follow a lot of advice, and now I'd like to take it back to what started the whole thing, which was just writing. I don't know. It's tough to say. I guess just trying to get back to what it originally was, which is just writing weird ass songs that probably don't make that much sense to other people with weird tunings and. Sad as crap and a bit brutal at times.
And so basically there are people in your life who are saying, you should write this type of song because these kinds of records sell. Is that it?
You know, it's not that. It's that, at least on the last record, there was so much material to choose from. And then we went with a producer that's highly touted from the 60s and 70s, Glenn Johns, who did a lot of the Rolling Stone stuff and Who and... So we just trusted his angle that he wanted to go in, which was kind of like this rock and roll kind of outfit thing, which was fun as hell, absolutely fun, and to not use computers and all that was liberating in a way. But at the same time, it wasn't exactly what we thought the album was going to sound like. So, and it's not, I don't mean to bag on anybody in the process. If anything, it's my fault for not steering it what in which my gut wanted me to go in. So it was fun as hell, but it might not have been the exact direction that we thought we should be going in. So it's just, it'll be interesting to get back to the core of it, which is our own gut instincts.
Is it, do you think it can be sort of, a liability sometimes to be a nice guy, where you don't want to like rock the boat, or you want to be like, yes. Okay, sure, if you guys think so. And then Absolutely. At a certain point, you're like, fuck, why didn't I?
Yeah, I can be completely non-confrontational about things, and if someone has a really hard opinion about something, you know, I can let them do that. Say, all right, well, cool, we'll just try that and see what happens. So yeah, it can be a bit counterproductive to not be, I guess, as forthright with your own personal feelings.
At what point in that album was it the album that just came out, or the one
before?
The
one that just came out. Okay. Or like, yeah, 6 months ago or something.
And then at what point did you hear it and you go, oh man, this wasn't exactly what we thought it was going to be? Was it too late to make it what you wanted to be?
There was that, but it was also unnerving that it was happening so fast. Or so quickly, because the one before that, Infinite Arms, did take us a long time of kind of overthinking the process a bit, which was maddening, but really fun. This one just went so fast that it seemed like there was no pain, so where's the gain kind of thing, even while it's happening. Unnerving for sure, and by the time it was over, certainly that feeling of, shit, did we do enough? You know, or did we not stand up for the material that we actually thought might be the best way to go?
And how do you do that? I mean, like, is it, are you basically just communicating through email, or do you have meetings, or how do you, you know, when you guys are all spread out, is it, how do you kind of pull that all together and stand as a united front against, you know, the other side?
Shit, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
I think for the majority of the time, they'll trust me to kind of make those hard decisions.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then we'll all kind of get together finally in a back lounge of a bus or something and be like, shit, what the fuck did we do? Damn it.
Yeah.
Or once we all get to finally air our, you know, positives or negatives, we feel very united. But I don't know, sometimes I guess just allow things to get, you know, things just go astray, you know, or just go awry. I don't know what the hell happened.
Well, it's hard because I think, particularly with something like this, you have to have a certain amount of eye for granularity, like in terms of, you know, how are all the small things sounding? How is each individual note sounding? How is all that sounding together? And then you have to be able to have that sort of global view, I guess, where you go, all right, how is everything as a unit working? How are all the songs working together? Exactly. Does it all make sense? And if you're focused too much on one or the other, I imagine, I'm guessing, that it's fuck. You just have to have a balance of all of it.
Yeah, might end up just asleep at the damn wheel because you are paying attention to how making sure your guitar part's right or something like that.
Yeah.
But shit, who knows? Maybe in 10 years I'll be like, that was the best fucking album we ever did.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, I was definitely like, each one of the records were done totally different way. Like we put them all in a row, all four of them. You know, it's kind of cool, like, you know, you learn from good and bad ways of, you know, processes that have gone on with the records, and just move on, make some more, and try to make it better than the last one.
Exactly.
But not as good as the next one.
do you ever think ahead and you go, you know, I have an idea for a song, but I feel like that'll probably be good for the seventh album. Like, you don't want to get too far ahead.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think, really, though, some of the material that was available at the time didn't seem like it would fit within that process or be exactly, it wouldn't be as good. Or even Glenn might not enjoy that kind of tone or something.
Yeah.
Like, it's aggressive or angular or something like that. He might not get it. And I think a couple times that happened. He just did not get that kind of tune. So yeah, it's like, all right, put that on the back burner and we'll take care of that next time.
Yeah.
Then do you, when you're playing live, is that your opportunity to throw the sounds in that you want to like sort of redo that, to, you know, almost like a do-over in those cases?
Absolutely. You have a chance to reinvent every night.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best part about playing live. You can just do anything.
We play so much. It's, you know, you don't have to fucking try something completely different one night. You can slide something in. If one of the dudes in the band goes, fuck, or something, or you're like, damn, that sounded like shit, well, we'll do that tomorrow in Topeka.
Yeah.
I love Topeka, dude.
I know, man. That's where your parents are hanging out, right?
Yeah, that's where everybody's coming these days. Topeka is the new
thing. Everybody's coming.
Everybody's coming.
Where? Topeka. So what's the sort of delineation between, like, we want to try new stuff or we want to express things in new ways that are exciting for us, but at the same time, you know, when people go to a show, a lot of times they don't necessarily want to be really surprised. Like, they want to...
Yeah.
That's why it's so funny to go see a live show when people get so caught. I'm like, play that song that I was listening to in my car, but play it exactly the same way.
Right. Yeah.
I just want to see you do it.
Yeah.
Like puppets.
Yeah.
There's the other side where people be like, they played exactly like the album. That's fucking boring.
Right.
You can't please everybody or anybody, it seems like.
I think, yeah, a good way to balance that out, to kind of get our rocks off by, like, doing something different. You play the song, but do it, you know, different, like, differently.
Yeah.
Like, totally. Hopefully better.
Yeah. Like, heavier is usually the case way we go.
Or sometimes you strip a heavy one down to completely, you know, desolate and sad.
Yeah. So that makes us, that keeps it fresh, and still they hear the tune.
Yeah.
Or hopefully they recognize the song.
At all, yeah.
Hey, I've always wanted to know, what is Dilly about?
Oh, shit. That's a great question.
All right, I think time's up. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, shit. That's like the one. If you fucking ask me about that song, I'm going to fucking flip this table over.
You know how close we are to that balcony, dude?
Oh, shit. We're 19 stories up.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't even know what the fuck that song's about. So you can throw me off the balcony, too.
Oh, man.
Isn't that kind of fun, though, that you can write a song? And it comes from somewhere in your brain.
Right.
And you may not even know what that is. And of course, people will assign what they think it is.
Right.
But I find that so interesting that you could write something and go, I don't know, I'm trying to express something, and even I don't know exactly what it is, but there it is. It obviously came out.
Yeah, I think a lot of times, I know Tyler Ramsey, our guitar player, he wrote the music to that. So I just had to put some words to it. And, I'll just mess around with, like, phonetic garbage, really. Just start babbling on a demo or something, just to kind of get the meter of how I want at least the melody to go. And then sometimes form the story around that. And I know there are some things snuck in there that are certainly a part of a storyline. But a lot of it might just be that's what the meter... Just kind of spitting out some fucking words.
Now, you might think that, but I honestly think that on a very subconscious level, that there's something that's pulling out of you that you may not even realize.
Oh, I know it. I'm not going to say it out loud, but I know what the hell that story's about.
Oh, you
I
do? Just, oh, okay. Yeah.
But that is true on other
on
songs.
Tons of shit.
So there is a story. There is a story about it.
I believe so, yeah.
But it's the placement of the, like...
Those weird little...
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not like a normal... That to me, I think, is what I've always loved about your music, is that nothing about it feels cookie cutter. Like, those aren't exactly on the meter. It's like, well, this is a 4-4 song, and then this part, and then here's a bridge. And this, like, they totally kind of... You know, it's the only thing I always love about Stevie Wonder is that, like, he'll come in out of nowhere where you didn't even realize there was a space for something.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck. And it just, like, sucker punches you.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I bet what that was a different take of different phonetic garbage at a different meter and listening to both of them at the same time and being like, oh, shit, you can... Those are the two different meats in the fucking bread sandwich or whatever. What the hell, you know?
That's the thing I love about his writing, you know, that what you just said. You know, it's totally like, but when I came into the band on the second record, and I was, you know, I remember my brother got a new car and he pulled up to my house in Columbia and was like, you got to check out the sound system, whatever. This is Bridwell's band. And we put on Everything All the Time, like on his new, like, Accord that he got or whatever. His best system ever. And he, like, just fucking cranked it up. And, like, I'd liked the record before, but listening to it there, I was like, wow, this sounds amazing. So I was huge fans of that. And when I joined the band, I was noticing, learning the song structures and everything, I was noticing what I really liked about it was the simple but totally unorthodox way of when to do something.
Yeah.
And how patient a lot of the songs are, you know, that he writes. Like, you know, when he brought me in the studio to put organ on stuff, and they just, like, sit there, and he was looking at me and be like, nope. Like, hit the chord. No, another measure goes by. No. I was like, holy fuck, this is awesome. Like, I'm playing one fucking chord for a long, long fucking time. And it changes at a certain time. Like, I was like, okay, I'll just have to remember where that is, you know? Only a couple changes, but it seems like just a huge landscape is built, being so patient on when to change chords. Which me, I was just like, oh, I can't wait to get to the next chord. You know, I want to, there's something different, but to have like a, it's a real super like, really laid back and broader approach that Ben has, I think, like to writing a song, which is...
But that's just being an amateur and having no idea how to write a song.
No matter what it is, it's fucking awesome. You know, a lot of people don't have it, whether, you know, a lot of people, you can't teach what he's got, man.
Oh, man. Yeah. It all comes from the heart.
It's true.
But do you see it as, you know, so like, you know, you're putting that chord way later in the song. Do you feel in your brain like, well, that's where that has to go? Or do you say, no, everyone else would put it there, so I'm going to put it here?
Oh, there's no rhyme or reason to it.
I mean, it just you just feel like that's where it should go?
Well, honestly, I mean, even when I first started doing it, didn't even know where to put my hands on guitar. So I got all these songs, a lot of these songs, are just like, oh, okay, my fingers are comfortable there. Now I'll tune the strings down to whatever makes a real or something sounding kind of chord, mm-hmm. and had no idea. So it's completely beyond me, at least back in the first two records especially. I just didn't even know how to play a normal chord on a guitar. You know?
Yeah, and I think, I'm not like a theory nerd or anything, you know, as far as like music theory, but you know, but we've talked before about like, you know, I don't think, you know, we don't even want Ben to like, you know,
learn how to play,
take lessons, yeah, or whatever, you know, because it's just kind of like, you know, I've seen like jazz like kind of ruin good rock guitarists, you know, because you know so much, you know.
Oh, and, right.
You know, and like it's like everything is so fucking cerebral and like, you know, everything has to kind of make sense, you know, but, you know, I'm guilty of it too, because, you know, I'm familiar with what chords, you know, would sound good together. And if, you know, if I make them not sound good together, it's on purpose, you know, or like there's some sort of rhyme in my head sometimes, you know.
That's so funny when the academics of it get in the way.
Totally gets in the way. They don't get in the way with them, you know, and I think that's...
I think they've begun to.
Yeah.
That's where it's like you need to strip all that shit away and go back to... That's what I think I'm trying to get back to is, man, fuck standard tuning and... just find some weird shit, and who gives a shit if it's one chord throughout the whole song?
Yeah.
Find something that just resonates within you, and don't worry about how it's supposed to be played by others or how it's going to be heard.
And really, I think that's awesome. You know, it's like, let's make a song. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be in a, you know, it doesn't have to be a certain chord in like the Western music. It doesn't have to be like, it could, you could make a song out of any instrument, no matter what it sounds like, no matter what condition the instrument's in. You know, if you hear something, you just want to keep it fucking, you want to hold that F sharp for fucking 24 measures, just do it. You know, nobody says you can't fucking do it.
What's
know?
A measure?
Exactly.
See? That's
yeah.
exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about. It's the new album, What's
yeah,
a Measure?
What's a Measure? And then the first chord is like 14 seconds long.
Yeah. Oh, it's just going to be huffing a bag of shit.
Yeah. No, I mean, I really do feel fortunate to be in a band with him. It was his original... Super. He's an American original.
Yeah, he's contractually obliged to say that.
I'm actually not.
Obligated, at least.
I can see the sincerity in his eyes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm serious. I mean, really.
Oh, I can't see your eyes. But I think it's kind of an exciting... I think frustration is an exciting place to be sometimes, because that's when you start breaking new ground in yourself, where you start digging around, and you're like, I'm not satisfied. I mean, like, I don't think... You know, any kind of art stuff, it's music or comedy or writing, whatever, like, I think a lot of the good stuff comes from you're frustrated.
Yeah.
And you're fucking have to figure it out. And that's a good place to be.
No shit.
Because whatever you're about to discover is probably going to hopefully make you really happy.
Yeah, I think that and survival are the two key elements, you know, because even starting the band, I'd just be washing dishes forever. Don't have any damn high school education or shit, so it's like I had to do something or I'd be right back in the dish pit, you know. So I think now it helps to be frustrated and to want to keep it going enough to survive, really.
Mm-hmm. What do you think you've learned in going from not really knowing anything about music or the music business to now you're four albums in? So what, when you look back, like, what do you feel? Do you sense growth, or do you know, are you aware of that, or what have you learned?
God, I've learned so much, but Also, throughout the band's existence, we've been through a number of different members. I think we have 10 ex-players at some point. But I think the greatest thing was learning that if something wasn't right, to correct it, to finally get to a place where there's harmony. And that's what we got to with Ryan joining in 2007, I believe. Mm-hmm. And Creighton, our drummer, he joined right before you did, maybe 2006. Mm-hmm. And later Bill and Tyler. It took a lot of wrong turns to get to that feeling that is this harmonious operation we have. So at least if there's that, it's like to trust your instinct and say, you know what, if this person isn't right, then maybe there's someone waiting that is going to feel like perfect, and that's what we got.
Mm-hmm. So with...
that patience I was talking about, see?
He knows how to be patient.
Yeah.
Not patient enough to fucking keep those dudes around, but
yeah. Patient to be like, okay, we're
patient to know that eventually the right person would come
exactly.
along.
Exactly.
Maybe cycle through some of those other people. I mean, is it, you know, I feel like a stand-up comic or a performer, like an actor or performer, someone who's, you know, who uses words as opposed to music. If I put out a comedy album and it didn't turn out exactly the way I want, I have the luxury of basically saying to the world, like, this wasn't exactly what I wanted, and I know that, and I want you to know that, so that we're all aware of it.
Right.
So, but what do you, like, you know, if you have frustrations with your album, how do you express, do you say that to people, or do you express it, or if it's not exactly what you want, are you like, oh guys, I know this is close to what we wanted, like, do you express that, or do you keep it in?
You just don't play those songs at the shows.
Ah, all right.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, it's hard to, I mean, you can just say that with any record, because, I mean, you don't have to defend it or anything. You can just say, like, that's what happened, especially the way we did the last record. It's like, put up some mics and played some songs, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
We're a band. This is some songs we had at the time. Bam. Moving on.
Yeah.
You know? So it's not like, you know, we don't feel like we have to defend it or fucking give any sort of disclaimer about it. It's like, it's one of our records. You know?
That's a much just healthier. Like that's a good attitude, because it. Yeah. I think holding on to stuff can ruin people if something's not... So, you know, if you're super obsessive, it's like, this wasn't exactly, god damn it.
It's never going to be, you know, I really believe that.
Yeah.
It's never going to be exactly the way we want it, you know. Especially, I mean, I made a solo record. I had no one to blame or anything. It's still not the way I wanted it, you know. It's just a fucking, you know, it's never going to be exactly the way you hear it.
You played every instrument, too.
Played every instrument. It's still not, and I spent a lot of fucking money doing it, and it's not exactly how I want it. I had all the time in the world. It's not exactly how I wanted it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if you...
But I'll make another one and try again. It's just like the... You know,
it's not going to be...
It's not
going to
be...
Want.
Yeah.
It is, I mean, you it's know? Sort of this... On a simplified level, it's the same thing where in my head, if I go, all right, I'm going to draw a picture of Alec Baldwin, and then I get a pen and I draw a face, and I'm like, fuck! Yeah. It looks like Alec Baldwin in my head!
Why is it Pac-Man?
Exactly!
Doesn't make sense. In my head, but just somewhere between my head and my fingers,
yeah,
Alec Baldwin did not appear on the page.
And as much as you can carry that around at shows and like show people a picture of Pac-Man, like, no, fuck you. That is Alec Baldwin.
Yeah. Don't you see
you
it?
Know, like, that is Alec Baldwin. You're a fucking idiot. That's Alec Baldwin. You know?
Anyone can see.
Yeah, yeah.
That's Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
You can sense the rage underneath.
Yeah.
You see it.
You know?
What do you guys do when you're touring? Do you go back and forth a lot? Or are you just out for like 2 months at a time?
Shit, this summer we'll go back and forth a lot. Yeah. From Europe to the States, back, hopping back and forth. But... usually we'll just get on a long-ass fucking run. You know, we'll go North America and then pop over to Europe for a long run. It seems like we're always just out.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really make any damn difference because we're glad to be working. So mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird. You know, you would always hear of bands being on, like, the Grateful Dead toured for 30 years.
Yeah.
Or, like, Metallica was on tour for 2.5 years for the Black album.
Right.
It's like, I don't
fuck
know.
No, you were off,
like,
for months
you
at a time.
You had to be off. For Christmas, Metallica, you know.
I don't know if the Grateful Dead did. I'm just not sure they had homes to go back to.
They did. You know what I mean? Yeah, no, in your head it seems like it, but, you know, if you do it for a living, you think, like, shit, 2 months seems like a long time to be on the road. Couldn't imagine, like, well, damn, like, I feel like a pussy, you know, because, you know, the Dead and Allman Brothers, the dudes were up, but whatever. They had to have taken time off, or they, you know, they just totally run themselves ragged, which they did anyway, and yeah. they probably still had time off. You know, because Metallica, I remember hearing that, like, they were on tour for 2 years, and I was thinking, well, that must have been fun, fucking cool. But they
look at the dates on the back of the shirt.
Yeah. There has to be some gaps. Yeah.
I know, I've been gone from home for like 3 weeks, and my girlfriend flew out last night and met me in Austin. I'd been in New York, but I was even starting to go a little, like, I can't go tour for a long period of time. I go perform and then I go home, and I go perform and I go home. I've been away from home for like 3 weeks, and I was like, I don't feel good. Like, I still feel right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You gotta have that touchstone. You know?
It's odd. Do you ever, when you get off stage, are you guys super energized, or do you sort of feel like, I'm empty? Like, you know, sometimes you can sort of have that thing where you throw it all out there for an audience, and then afterwards you're just like, I just kind of feel tired and empty.
I can't even like think for at least like 15 minutes. Hands don't work. I'm trying to get out a cigarette and dropping everything.
Yeah.
And then about 30 minutes later, there's no sleep. Yeah. Like just thinking about how, at least a good performance, just completely so jazzed that the mind just starts going crazy. I think because it's not natural for me to do this job at all. That it just boggles my mind and gets so excited about it, you know, or just to think that it at least came out the way, not like a record, but like the performance happened exactly like we wanted it to happen. The set list fucking worked.
Yeah, you know,
it had ebbs and fucking flow, and right. We just killed.
How can we capture that, do that all the time?
Exactly, yeah. It's maddening in a great way, though. Like, stay up all night.
Well, it's hard because a large part of that is you're forming a relationship with an audience, and an audience is essentially a unified sentient mass.
Yeah.
And you're not always gonna, I mean, it's like a lot of it depends on your audience, because you're forming a relationship with them.
Yeah.
So if you can sort of be in phase, then it totally works out. But I think that's why it's hard for, like, oh, we're going to capture that lightning every night, because mm-hmm. not every audience is exactly the same.
Yeah. Some people are boring.
Yeah, it's I don't think there's ever been a time where the audience has just sat there like, and we've been backstage like, holy shit. Like, they just look like they're like not being entertained. Just kind of a mellow audience watching us. Maybe they weren't. Maybe they thought it was terrible. But I don't think we've ever come backstage after a show and like, with a super placid audience, I'm like, that was the most kick-ass show ever.
Yeah, no shit.
You know, like if the crowd's going ape shit, we can be throwing clams all over the place, and like, we're stoked.
Yeah.
You know, so that I think that is the you're exactly right. It's the key element to, like, you know, it's, they have to be on fire in order for us.
What about you when you have a good show?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah, it's the sleep thing is absolutely true. It's, you just keep replaying it in your head, and you go home, and I guess I'd only been doing stand-up for a few years, and I did a set at the Improv in Los Angeles, and Drew Carey was there, and I fucking crushed. And afterwards he came in and was like, hey man, that was really funny. And it just, you know, I'd only been doing stand-up for a few years, and it just, I still was like, oh my God. And I didn't sleep that night, because I was just replaying in my head all of the, I was like, yeah, it really did go well.
And Drew Carey saw that.
And Drew was, he said, he didn't have to come up to me, and it just, like, he just said a couple words to me, and it totally, I was flying on that for like a week.
Feels so good.
It does. It was really great. Do you guys have a favorite show? Like, is there a show that in particular that you think of as like, yes, this is the benchmark for?
There's tons of those where, I think we played Roskilde in Denmark in 2009, I think. And even before we went on, the energy in this tent, this festival tent, was fucking bonkers. People were chanting. And like soccer chants, you know, before we even took the stage. And then they just lost their fucking minds. They sang louder than we could turn our amps up. I mean, they were crazy.
Yeah, that was that point. That was the biggest crowd we ever played in front of.
And that's what we want. I mean, I think we just want to see people lose their fucking minds, you know? And I don't give a shit if you're even a quiet song. Go ahead, scream, do whatever.
Yeah.
You know, let's. I just want to see some organized chaos and some anarchy.
Like, actually, during Infinite Arms in Vegas, that's when that little skirmish broke out in the front.
Uh-huh.
Like, we have really great fans. Like, you don't see, like, fights and crazy shit a lot with us. You know, we have really respectful, awesome fans. But in Vegas, the last two times we played there, we've seen, like, a fight in the crowd.
That's right.
And, like, we, and, like, it was during Infinite Arms, which, and, like, during, like, I had a dream, like the super like the most mellow part ever, and like you know, you see people just going, like we have like projection and crazy lights and like, and people just zoning out, and then like these two girls like fighting, you know, and it was like the sweetest part of the set, you know, they're just like fucking worked up, you know, and like at every point I was like. Yeah, it's kind of that's funny. A reaction, you know?
No shit.
I think they're fighting over who was the bigger fan.
Yeah.
Of Band of Horses.
That's usually.
I am. No, yeah. Fuck you, bitch. And then it's like it's time to throw down. Yeah. It's a badge of pride right there.
Yeah. Well, we fought on the side of the stage when we were on the road with My Morning Jacket like every night. Like,
oh yeah,
I'm such a bigger fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Than you are. So Ben and I would just duke it out. Like
we'd do sides. Naked weigh-in before just to see who was at least heavier.
I know.
I'm a heavier fan. Yeah.
I have a live recording of theirs that was part of some music festival somewhere, and it's and they're doing Bermuda Highway, and it's his voice is fucking insane. Yeah. Like it's pitch perfect, but it's a little raspy,
mm-hmm.
and it just you can hear the silence, if that makes any sense. Like you can hear people in the audience just like. Like with their mouths agape because his voice just cuts through so beautifully.
That's funny. I was when I lived with an awesome songwriter musician Danielle Howell in Columbia at one point. We were buds, and I remember I was listening to them on her computer while she was out of town on the tour. And she called just to check in, and I remember her saying something like through the phone, like wow. Like who's that singing? It's got a hell of a voice, and like I could barely hear it.
Shit. You know?
And I was like, "That's My Morning Jacket." She's like, "Wow, you can hear some pain in there." Anyway, I gotta go. I was like, "Holy shit!" You know, like you can hear some pain in there. Like, you know, like I was listening to it. I was like, "Yeah, I guess you can," but like she could hear it, like even through a phone, like
totally cuts through.
Yeah, you know, so it's pretty funny.
That's what I think is so interesting about what. I mean, I'm going to make a dumb, obvious statement here, but what mass pop culture has accepted as, like, good singers. And it's that kind of annoying, technically proficient, my friends and I always called it soul yodeling, but, like, that American Idol, like, yeah, you can do all of those things soul with your voice.
Scales.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. But, you know, you listen to, like, an Etta James record, and she's not doing that, and her voice is amazing, and because she has soul. Like, there's a story that she's telling. Yeah. And I think, culturally, we're so obsessed with, like, fame and the superficial parts, and, oh, I just want people to think I'm good, rather than just, oh, this person has a real soul and a story to tell and emotions to get out. That it's the emotions, not the ability to arpeggiate your voice up and down.
You hear a lot of singers that are like influenced by Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she's like the queen
of
soul, you know? And singing, she's to me like one of the best voices ever that I've ever heard recorded. And you don't hear her doing those long like arpeggios. You hear her just going like, you know, like stabbing just like, oh, yeah!
You know what
like,
I blame for that? I blame Mariah Carey. I seem to remember like in the late 80s when she was young, like just this young girl with an insane voice that could do that dog whistle octave.
Yeah.
That she was the one that was like, like just did all this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that fucking ruined an entire generation.
I think she took cues from Whitney though.
Oh, you think so? Maybe you're right.
But they could actually like they could do it well.
And their voices
were
amazing.
And that was their thing, you know. So maybe if you're influenced by that, you don't have to do that.
But it just feels like peacocking so much, where it's like, look what I can do.
Oh, yeah, totally, you know? Man. Yeah, yeah.
It's like disguising. It's like a facade. It's like a movie set where you're like, oh, look, that's a beautiful house. And you go inside and you're like, oh, this is just the front of a house. There's nothing inside but a couple of work lights.
But a couple of outlets. You can stick your finger in it and get kind of the same.
Yeah, yeah. Same thing. And a couple of grips shit huffing.
Right.
Because totally. Yes. that's where they sneak up.
Finally.
the new experimental album that you're going to do next is shit huffing.
Can't wait.
Just please do me one favor.
Hmm.
I bet just write. Let's sort of combine some things that we talked about on the podcast today.
Okay.
Please write, and I'll know, and you'll know, and you'll know. Write a song about shit huffing, but don't say that it's shit huffing.
Right.
Just describe. Just
describe the feeling, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just capture the essence of what shit huffing is.
You got it.
And and I'll know. We'll know that that's. I would be honored if you if. And people are like, what is this beautiful, haunting song?
Yeah.
And then when someone in an interview says, what's that song about? You just go, it's shit huffing.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Well, people
Chris Hardwick will know.
Yeah.
Ask him. We'll pawn it off on you. That'd be great.
No shit. It'll be our little
yeah.
secret.
And ask Chris, yeah, like every single, ask Chris Hardwick.
Then you'll have fans on the next album all trying to figure out which the shit huff song is.
Yeah.
It's ironically not the song called shit huff. You think that's going to be it, but that's a red herring. That's a brown herring.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Ben brings these to everybody to go.
That is hilarious.
Yeah. I didn't catch it. Chris, our aesthetic director, came up last night and was hanging out, and he's like, well, that's kind of ironic, isn't it? Like, I did not even know.
Okay, we're sitting in this one part of the room, and we're at a dining table, and behind Ben's head, two individual pictures of horse silhouettes.
I think they're identical, too, right?
Are they identical? Oh, maybe they are. Yeah, they're identical.
Yeah.
But it sort of looks like a... like an etching or like I don't know, but they're two really kind of spectral looking horses that are behind your head.
Oh, yeah.
I always request that. Yeah, yeah. These suites that I stay in all the time. Yeah.
The writer says must have two spectral ponies.
Mm-hmm.
Spectral ponies. Identical.
It's really the same spectral pony.
The exact
twice.
Same thing, yeah.
Yeah. Or there could be
weird shit, man.
Yeah.
Like those fucking bulbs over there that have been ripped open to have this weird, like, torn vag thing going on.
Yeah.
Golden dinosaur eggs.
Trying to describe this place is.
I would have said alien eggs. Like, it almost it's a little bit of, like alien.
Yeah. Oh, and there's the two waters by the TV. You left those untouched.
Yeah.
Probably because
they weren't wine.
$7.
I didn't touch them because they weren't red wine.
I need to come with that red wine water then.
It is. I do like to, when I'm doing a show and I go backstage, especially if it's at a college, because the colleges, they're really sweet and they're generally student-run organizations, and so they're extra accommodating. I just pretend that whatever is already in the room was on my rider. Like, oh, you got that, you got the stuffed beaver?
That's awesome.
I kind of just list things, like, oh, okay, good, yeah, you got the...
Oh, you got the sheetrock that's beat to shit.
You got the three-legged chair in the corner? Yeah. Good.
Not a lot of people get this white table.
Yeah, everything's here.
Right?
Yeah. I had the best dressing room the other day in at one of the Penn State campuses, which was the girls' wrestling locker room. But really, a locker room that they had put two... cushy chairs like this in front of the lockers, and then just a table with a champagne bucket and a bottle of water. Like, they made it look really fancy.
Yeah.
But the juxtaposition of, like, there's girls' wrestling uniforms in the meshed locker, right? But it was really funny.
What do those even look like?
You know, just like, kind of like a unitard, but just like a one, like a bathing, kind
like a one,
like a one piece bathing suit kind of a thing.
Sexy.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was. And I knew it was the girls' locker room because there was a toilet connected to it. Honest to God, bucket of tampons, just out. I mean they were new, but just a bucket of tampons, just like a fucking bucket,
like an ice bucket.
Yes, like an ice bucket with tampons,
with a handle on it and everything.
Yes, like if you were a tampon connoisseur and you're like, bring me my bucket of tampons. But obviously just there in case anyone needed them, but it was just, the presentation of it was just so weird.
Now you got that on your rider, too.
Now I can say the rider, because they have a bucket of tampons.
Platoon of tampons, please.
Hang on a sec, let me have tampons. Okay, 38, good, there's 38 tampons here. No less, no more, no less.
Yeah, only the green tampons.
38.
Yeah.
Oh, these aren't them. I'm going to need the Slenders.
Oh, right.
we got to hang out in a lot of locker rooms touring with Pearl Jam. Like, they played big basketball arenas and hockey arenas, and that was pretty bizarre. Yeah, they'd also kind of, you know, set up the dressing room to look nice, but no, it's a nasty ass locker room,
sweaty, like weird, playing like Buffalo Sabres hockey arena, like just hanging out, smoking cigarettes in the Buffalo Sabres locker room, taking massive craps back there.
And it always comes back to massive craps.
It does, really.
That's
why you shouldn't take more than like 3 seconds to decide what you're gonna eat. It's all gonna turn to shit.
Was Eddie Vedder like, hey guys, you know, I take a lot of massive craps in the room too, guys.
Come in here, man. Check this one out.
We bonded, yeah.
How's Pearl Jam? They seem like kind of nice guys.
About as easy as it gets, man.
Coolest,
I swear, they
nicest.
Were so sweet to us.
Yeah.
And really just inspiring to see a band that can last that long and really enjoy what they do enough to, like, to work at it, to put on a fucking stellar show every night, man. It was super inspiring. And they were really kind to us. It was a great surprise.
Yeah, Eddie gave us all personalized Eddie Vedder Zippos the last day of tour at Madison Square Garden.
What? He has his own Zippo?
Yeah, he smokes a cigarette during a certain part of the show and chunks a lighter out every night to the, you know, he throws out probably 20 tambourines a night. He's a showman. he's a fucking badass.
The tambourine budget.
Come on, Eddie. Oh, dude, I mean, we saw backstage box of tampons.
Hey, wait a minute.
Tambourine.
I could not say it.
These tambourines
box of tam.
These tambourines are so absorbent.
They are.
Exactly.
For your heavy days, and then you can play 60s rock.
That's right. Yeah, shake that shit.
It's
you pull the string, it'll play itself.
It's like I could... I get my period and I can also play Free Design songs. Kites are fun.
I thought you were just masturbating. No, I'm playing music.
I'm playing music, guys. Yeah. I'm Free Design. Yeah. I'm Free Designing it.
I'm doing both.
Yeah. Multitasking, bro.
Free Design is either the most ironic band in history or the least ironic band in history, but I'm guessing it's the latter.
Yeah, I would say the latter.
If you've ever... It must be so enjoyable to write a song about the exact thought you're having in your head and just describe it as if it were a lecture.
It happens all the time.
Kites are fun, you guys. Yeah. Kites are fun.
Kites are fun.
Yeah. Automatically gives it some sort of like validation.
Yeah.
And truth.
It really is.
To music. Or kites are not fun, you know?
Right.
That's a good tune, too.
That would be the John Lennon way to do that.
Right.
That kites are not fun. He would take the ironic approach.
Right.
As opposed to just the direct, kites are fun.
Kites are kind of fun.
Yeah. I huff shit.
I need
to just huff shit and describe it in a more...
In a musical way.
Yeah.
And everything can be a drug metaphor as well.
Just
kites are fun. I huff shit.
Yeah.
You know, what does he really mean by that?
When it wins a Grammy, and it will, just throw me in the thanks somewhere and go. He'll know.
Yeah.
And then that'll be our special moment. I'll be at home watching the Grammys.
Like I'll have the brown hanky sticking out of my my very fancy suit pants.
The huff hanky.
Uh huh. Yeah. I guess I should put it in my lapel, so you know I can actually smell the hanky.
Just put a brown carnation.
Exactly.
On your suit jacket.
Yeah, the hanky might mean that I want you to shit on my chest.
No. That's a totally different.
Different podcast.
That's a totally different fetish too.
I'll just give a little sniff, and you'll know I'm thinking about.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll go, thank you,
guys. That was for me. Yeah. And then I'll go back to my bag.
It's so fucking high. Yeah.
Hey, Ben, it's Chris. I may have huffed a lot of shit, but did you just thank me on the Grammys?
What are you talking about? Who is this?
I need help.
We have no idea who you are, Chris.
Who was the... And it's not that we have no idea who you are anymore. It's just we have no idea who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, just in general.
Yeah. I don't know. No, we did that podcast together. No. Podcast?
A podcast.
Those stopped being made in 2014.
The
Grammys haven't existed for years.
Yeah. So, wait, we talked about your band. What band?
We're not in a band. We're bankers.
Yeah. We're shit huffers, freak.
It's going to feel so good.
It is.
Mm. Was it, what did you think about the CeeLo cover?
Loved it.
It was pretty cool.
Blew my fucking mind, man. I think my manager called and said, something crazy is happening. I'm sending you a link to this song. And it was a different mix than what ended up being the release version. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting on my back porch, I guess I just had one kid at the time, but and she was little and she was spazzing, 2 years old or something, like trying to listen to it on my iPhone or something like that with the speaker up to my ear, trying to hear what the hell's going on. She's freaking out. It's like, CeeLo Green is covering one of my songs here? Like, what the fuck is going on here? Just could not grasp what was happening. And then the fact that they released it at all, did a video and shit, I mean, it would just seem like a dream come true, man. Anytime somebody covers anything, or I don't know, or somebody is affected by what we do, it's not lost on me. But someone of that stature that we respect so much was fucking
mine. When you guys have, you're both up in a high register too, so it sounded good.
I think that dude's got all kinds of damn registers, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's sang it so well, and I think the way they reimagined it was really cool, you know? Hip and fucking, you can mm-hmm. dance to it.
Is there a weird, do people send you covers? Something like Radiohead, people are like, oh, we covered their songs with printers.
Right.
You know, do people send you covers of songs, or do you have a particular...
No, I mean, I think the couple ones that I've seen, someone sends a link to YouTube or something, like Kid Cudi used a sample of ours for a song that he did. Someone just tips me off to it, and it just... I think even when it's like a little kid singing it, you know, or someone like CeeLo or Cudi doing that shit, it just warms the heart, man, honestly, that someone would care enough about it, whether it's a little kid singing it or, you know, a kid that learned the guitar chords on YouTube and no one ever, you know, knows about it. That shit is just, that's the coolest validation, I think, to what we're doing, because it affected them enough to want to learn it, you know?
It's awesome. Yeah, when a little kid is singing it, you know that you might be onto something with that piece, because they don't even know how to bullshit
yet,
you know? So they're just pretty honest. They'll tell you what's up.
And we love covering songs so much, too. I think when we have an urge to cover a song, it's not only just to look under the hood or whatever. It's like the song really resonates with you. Something about the words or maybe just the melody. It's a very honest tribute to whatever, how great you think that song is. So to be included in that process is flattering.
Not that anyone's going to listen to me, but if anyone listening has a bluegrass band, I've always thought, one of my favorite songs of yours is The Funeral.
Uh-huh.
I think that would make an amazing bluegrass song.
No shit.
Like if you just sort of do, like if you just like stand up bass, you know, a little bit of fiddle, and then just like some good 3 or 4 part harmonies in there and just like strip it down, I think that song would make a fucking awesome bluegrass song.
Shit, we got a couple shows coming up at the Ryman where we're doing acoustic electric evening with performance.
Because you could start off really slow, you know, and then when you go to, then you can go double time in the chorus. Funeral.
Yeah, that was our idea that we just came up with. Me and Ryan did.
Yeah, that was a really great idea.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Put it on shit off.
Yep.
You're helping us with everything today. Coming up with song ideas.
Yeah.
Cover idea. You're coming
what
up with.
What you got for us, man?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just want to manage a band.
Yeah. You're a natural.
No, poor Rick. Rick's such a nice guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Your manager and I, he reminded me that we worked at MTV together in the 1900s.
That's our tour manager, Rick. Yeah. He always brings that up, that he was at MTV.
And he was a PA there for a while, which was, if you were a PA and you were good at your job, God help you, because that meant that that machine was going to sap every bit of energy you had, because they preyed upon people who would do a lot for no money. So if you were good at something, the benefit was that, you know, within 2 years you could be like head of production, you know, because people would always get better jobs and leave. Yeah. But it's just
you're
funny.
Going nowhere if you're a PA. Like, if you're good at it, you're going to be one forever.
They're
going
to keep you down. Yeah. No, but people always would quit there, so they would just promote people really fast.
We did an interview with Kennedy last year.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. In Austin. Yeah. Was it in Austin?
Somewhere.
Kennedy. Yeah. I haven't seen her in years.
She's sweet. She's really
amazing.
So cool. And that fucking blew my mind.
And Kurt Loder's my dad.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's not true.
He's another one of those... Like
John Norris is related to Chuck Norris.
That's not true.
I know.
I want it to be true.
I want it to be true, too.
I wanted them to be the same person.
Yeah.
Just different sides of the personality. And you're like, John Norris. And he's like, nope, it's me, Chuck. And then the mask comes off.
With a dude like Kurt Loder, with a name like that, you got to have a lot of kids.
No kid, man. Yeah. And I dated Puck from The Real World.
What a reference you pulled out of your head. Yeah. That was The Real World San Francisco.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. We dated a long time ago.
True story.
That was Los Angeles.
Oh, fuck.
This is a true story.
That was John,
the country singer. Yeah. Dude. True story. Hey, man, how come you're putting rap in my country? Well, how come you're putting country in my rap?
Yeah.
How will these people live together? This is just like the real world.
Watch them huff shit.
No, that was not popular yet.
Oh, yeah.
That was not in vogue
Guinness
until...
Guinness for Dominic.
That was not in vogue until right after this podcast goes up.
Maybe,
that's right.
Maybe those shows made people want to huff shit. So maybe
I think those shows felt like people huffing shit, but I don't think they necessarily were. This was really fun. We did it. This flew by. We did Absolutely. This was an hour and 20 minutes.
Holy Damn. Shit.
Thank you. So I hope you didn't have to be somewhere.
I have to go check out of my room and take a huge piss.
Everything now.
Yeah. I love that all the waste room from your bed is huge.
Yeah, we consume lots of stuff on the road. Yeah.
So it's all got
to come out strong, brother. Yeah.
He's got some daddies, man. Some huge pisses, massive, the big fry and the fucking everything's fucking.
I dream big, shit big.
He takes the crap of horses.
Yeah, it does.
Come shit on. Big or go
oh,
home.
Nice. Come on.
Oh, man.
There's two. This is a bad way to end the podcast.
No, it's a great way to end the podcast.
It was fine, and then I took it there. Yeah.
Any way to end it would be good.
No, I have nine more questions all about the consistency.
Dude, it's such a pleasure meeting you.
Yeah, it's good to meet you too, awesome, right? Thanks, man. Ben, good
to
see you.
So fun.
I'm so mad that I have a show at the same time as yours tonight. I really want to see you live so bad.
You won't when you see the reviews of it.
Believe me, I don't read reviews about anything. I don't trust them. I don't think people who review things are not the right people to review them because they're too...
Reviewy?
They're too reviewy. They're looking for problems.
Yeah.
They're looking to criticize. They listen to music in a way that regular people don't listen to music. And I don't think they necessarily represent... I don't think they represent how people who are not super music nerds listen to music.
Right. They're in the moment enjoying the other people that aren't writing about it.
Not taking notes.
Yeah.
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 So fuck all that shit.
Yeah, they're trying to get instead of like absorbing it. Yeah. Did you ever see the Ryan Adams thing on YouTube when he called the guy?
Yeah.
Jim what's the guy's name? DeGoria. So I can't remember his name.
I heard the message. It's like, "Hey man,
it's the best thing ever."
Yeah.
God, I love it. Have you heard it?
No.
Oh my God, it's on YouTube. It's like he starts out, "Hi Jim. It's Ryan Adams." Yeah, he started off kind of like, you know, kind of
catching up.
Yeah, just catching up. Yeah, I heard you were at the show last night. I read your review, and then he's just like, "I just don't fucking." Yeah, he's like, "You fucking sit there with your fucking pen in the back, like nobody fucking wants you there." It just turns into like, it's so awesome. I am. Oh my God,
it's something that you would never do.
It's something he actually called to do.
Yeah, but
like, you know, you'd read a shitty review, and you're like, God, I just really want to just call him and be like, "Dude, really? Like, what are you talking about? Like, you have no idea what you're talking about." Yeah. But Ryan actually called him. It's like Monday, 10 a.m. You know, it's like either he's up early or he's up late.
Oh, shit. Ryan did it so you don't have to.
Yeah, it's legendary YouTube shit. Right.
I wonder what the guy's reaction was. I wonder if he was like, "What a crackpot," or, "Oh, I was wrong," or, "This is awesome.
Yeah.
I can't wait to put this on the internet."
Oh my God.
Obviously, he couldn't wait because it's up on the internet.
It's so funny.
Is it voicemail?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a voicemail. Okay. It's the longest voicemail. And it just starts, you can just see, like, you can just visualize steam, like, slowly starting to creep out of his ears. About the end of it, you're just like, "You know what? Fuck you." And this, you know, like, he's like having a conversation with himself, but telling this guy, it's just fucking hilarious.
It just devolves into, like, he wants to keep saying stuff, expressing stuff, but he's out of words. And it's just
he's like, "You know what? Just fuck off." You know, like, we're the ones listening to that today.
Not afraid to say what we all want to say.
Yeah.
I like the fist pump that you did. Yes, someone did it. Fuck you all.
Yep.
All right. Yep. Thanks, guys. Thanks so much.
Yep. Thank you, Chris.
Enjoy your burrito, everybody.
Yeah.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Check out their new commerce solution. You can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com/nerdist and use the offer code NERDIST5.
Once upon a beat! Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.